Hey, everybody, welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
I'm Matt.
And I guess he can lift 200 pounds.
And welcome to the show. How's everybody doing?
Great. So excited to talk about this.
Yeah, because we just watched the pilot, the first episode of Watchmen, the new HBO series, showrun by a dear friend to the Jay and Jack Podcasting Network, Damon Lindelof. And yeah, this is in the future telling, or at least a continuation of the Watchmen story. And it came out swinging, to not use it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
horrible pun. But anyways, yeah, initial gut thoughts here, guys.
I'll let Jack go first, because Jack, you just watched Watchmen, the movie.
I just watched Watchmen, the movie, which I liked it. I just thought it was a little long. But this one had me, of course, you have the opening scene, and I'm pulled in right away. So I was watching, you know, I was into it from minute one. So I enjoyed it.
Yep.
I don't want to make any loss comparisons here, but you know, the beginning kind of had that same gut reaction that we had when we first watched Lost, where you're just like, what is happening? There's an airplane, you know, it's bombing. There's clearly a riot occurring in the street. There's lynching. This is Armageddon right here. And, similar to maybe even, you know, some of the early, what was it, the early ideas of Lost, where they wanted to kill off the main character in the first pilot episode. I felt like they kind of did that. I mean, the guy that you think is the main character.
Yeah. I think any time Regina King's going to be in it, we just know she's going to be the main character, you know, props to Regina King. But I really like that call out, Matt, where you know, in the original Lost pilot, Jack was going to be played by an older Michael Keaton, and mm-hmm. then he was going to be, you know, killed by the smoke monster, and that kind of just would twist the whole thing. I didn't even make that connection in this one, because, you know, the end where he's hanging in the bit of blood drops on his chief badge, a la the comedian's smiley pin button from the comic book series. I was like, oh, okay, so he's this show's comedian, or, you know, the person that dies, that now they probably, that'll set this chain of events in motion. But yeah, great call out there for that connection.
Was Don Johnson's character named Charlie?
No, okay. Judd.
But it, I was sticking with the Lost theme, sorry.
I'm glad Jay, you mentioned the badge with the blood, because I thought that was perfect. You know, some of the visual call outs to the actual Watchmen series. And Jack, even if you didn't pick it up on that, I think that it's subtle enough there that
I noticed it right away.
Oh, okay. All right. Not trying to take anything away from your
that's okay. I just watched it last night, so it was fresh in my
mind. Okay.
But I will say, you know, Damon and company, and there's a lot of, you know, Lost connections in there. We got Jeff Jensen, story editor, as well as Nick Cuse, Carlton Cuse's son, who also co-wrote some of the best episodes of The Leftovers with Damon.
Yes, he did.
Are there. But taking on something like The Watchmen, which is considered one of the greatest collection of comic book stories ever released. It had a semi-successful movie adaptation, I guess you could say. But to kind of come in and take the undertaking of a continuation story set, you know, if the comic book is 1985, right? This is in 2019. And I guess we're saying this is in the comic book universe and not in the Zack Snyder version of the film. Because in the movie, they kind of replaced the giant squid monster thing that was the end of the comic book with just a big explosion, which makes sense why they did the movie. But this with the squids coming down from the sky. So I guess we're saying what happened in the comic book is the true past. Is, Matt, did you kind of sense that as well? Or
yeah, well, and everything that I kind of, and I tried to stay away from anything spoilery beforehand, but, you know, I did kind of take a peek at a couple articles on the webs, interwebs there, but yes, the squids coming down is definitely like we're staying to. Watchmen is canon. Whatever happened in that comic book is pretty much the Bible that he's sticking to. Anything else beyond that DC has done with that series, it's like that's forget about it.
Which I like, because I think. And I guess we can presume that Ozymandias is still trying to like keep the thread alive to kind of, because you know the end of the comic book series, the whole, you know, his whole, I guess you could say, evil twist was to save humanity from like nuclear holocaust. So is he kind of continuing things just to try and basically manipulate humanity in whatever direction he wants to?
I guess so. I don't really know what his character is up to at this point. So, Jack, I mean, you picked up on who Ozymandias was in this, right? Or
Jeremy
not.
Irons, if he didn't
catch. Yeah, that's how I figured he was.
But okay. There's also in that news article that Louis Gossett Jr. his character Will Reeves looked like he was reading said. Adrian, if I'm pronouncing this wrong, I apologize. I've only read it, but Vite.
Trust me, it's Vite.
Vite. Yeah. He's dead, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that on that little news article that Vite was dead.
Yes. As Angela Abar, Regina King's character, is going into her cookie shop, which. It was I'm blanking on the name now, but anyways, I think it was Milk and
there weren't Hanoi. There weren't a lot of cookies in there.
No, but I like the pun of Milk and Hanoi.
Yes, and Hanoi. That was funny.
But yeah, he had a newspaper. Just kind of quickly glanced past, and it said Vite dead. So that could be him just playing tricks or whatever. But again, it seems there was just a little taste of his character in this, where he's, you know, in this castle. And if you notice, the castle looks very similar to the castle that Dr. Manhattan was building, presumably with his mind, in that quick clip of him on Mars.
Oh, yes. Yes. Nice connection there. That is the only part of Dr. Manhattan that we get is him building a castle and tearing it down.
Yep.
Or maybe he's destroying the castle. So we can obviously make some connections there, because there is a bigger game that is definitely played out in the Watchmen series with those two main characters. Mm-hmm. And Ozymandias, known as the smartest man in the world, I thought it was interesting. There's also another little call out to the comic series is that I think it's issue 11 or 12. It's, you know, two writers were approaching. Mm-hmm. The first time we see him, he is riding a horse. So he is approaching as a writer. So I thought that was kind of a subtle little, I don't know if that's planned that way, but I mean, it's definitely, I felt like a call out to the comic. And I don't know what is going on with the people that call him master, because
yes.
I almost felt like he had some weird mental control over them.
That, but, or were they like not human. Robots or something?
Well, you guys have been watching a lot of Westworld. So.
Jack, what did you think? Did you say the same thing I said at the same time?
Yeah, I didn't think they were human because he didn't know what he handed him a horseshoe instead of a knife to cut the cake. And who messes that up? But he goes, oh, I'm sorry, you need a knife. So either he's built robots or, you know, they're calling him master. So I'm going to say they're some kind of clones or they're robots or something like that.
Something's off for sure.
Yeah, no, that works. I mean, especially if you're going to fake your death and you're going to surround yourself with servants to take care of you, you can't have actual humans because they will leak. They will always, right. Like, you know, one thing that I did read prior to watching this, I realized that it's not canon whatsoever, but I just wanted to get into the mood of Watchmen, and I hadn't read the Before Watchmen series. And although I didn't cover all of the characters in that those issues, I did want to specifically read Ozymandias and kind of his backstory. And it kind of basically fills in all the gaps of how he planned everything that occurs in Watchmen. One of the smart things that they do in that comic series, I realize, again, this is not canon, but he basically kills off anybody that knows what's happening. So he's always covering his tracks so that people are accidentally killed. The architects that build his secret base in Antarctica, they just mysteriously vanish or crash on an airplane. So I definitely think he's smart enough to not have humans. So I think you're, you know, I don't know why I didn't even think robots. So
or again, like clones or something. Something was off for sure.
Yeah, and they're not good at making cake.
And yeah, exactly. And the last bit that we had with him was he's writing a 5-part tragic play, The Son of the Watchmaker, which is Dr. Manhattan. So
The Watchmaker's Son.
The Watchmaker's Son.
Watchmaker's Son, yes.
Yeah, 5-act tragedy. So
it'd be curious to see how it's seemingly they're both thinking of each other in the little bit of time that we had of them, or that we saw of them in this episode, with Dr. Manhattan and Mars creating what looked to be that four-spired kind of castle thing that Ozymandias was in, and then Ozymandias talking about how, you know, he's writing this play called The Watchmaker's Son. So it's a little bit of taste there. It's how Damon plays his game, and we'll kind of see how that one plays out, but it definitely has me intrigued. Let's dig into, you know, all the new characters here and kind of seeing where we see them coming into play. And let's start with Will Reeves, which is the young child that we saw in the beginning in that kind of, it wasn't a flashback scene, but it was in the past in 1921 Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we talked about how it was a very harrowing scene, it takes you right into the scene. And I know for Colleen and I, like, just with like the women and children being killed and everything, it was just a very visceral,
Now, didn't this actually happen?
Huh? Yes. So May 31st, 1921 to June 1st, 1921. It's an estimated there's 36 known deaths that occurred during this this riot, but there's an estimated anywhere from 100 to actual 300 deaths that occurred in this. It's one of the greatest, or not greatest, the largest, excuse me, I guess, what would you call it? Like lynchings that ever occurred. It's really awful. So
it was a hard scene to watch.
Yeah. And I thought it really set up some of the dynamics of the race divisions that are still going on that we see in the show later on. But yeah, it was, and then the role reversal of the woman, you know, the man comes in, and then the woman who's playing piano, like, she grabs the gun, which kind of reminded me of Angela's character at the very end, where she grabs a gun out of the chimney or whatever. It's just like that strong female, powerful woman that's like, okay, I'm going to get my baby to safety.
Well, I like when she reached back on the bed and pulled it out of the bedboard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty. Who would have even thought put one there? So, pretty impressive.
But yeah, so opening with that, and you know, it has been called the single worst incident of racial violence in American history, kind of sets the stage, and that character, Will Reeves, is still alive at what would be, if it's 2019, 105 years old.
105 years old, yep.
Played by Louis Gossett Jr. And he kind of, when we first see him, when he interacts with Angela outside her cookie shop, I was like, could that be the kid? And then, you know, at the end of the episode, it's like pretty much hits you over the head with it because he has the note.
Right. He has the note, yes.
Him. But then it asks, you know, that scene ends with, you know, him waking up from a car crash, the little boy, And he picks up a baby. The two adults have been killed. So there's still a story to be told there that we don't know.
Love that mystery.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I just love that mystery of what it's setting up in the past with those two characters. And even the little subtle call out, like, I might be reading into this, but the fact that the note says, watch over this boy, the show's called Watch Men, Watch Boy. Like, it's just really cool that, like, they would put those words together like that. You know, they could have chosen anything else, like, but watch over this boy. So,
yeah. And another thing I thought interesting too, I was curious to see, you know, how directly would that story tie into the main storyline? Because something that Watchmen, the comic book, did, and it seems like Damon's doing it in this series as well, is the kind of the stories that are not the main story, but they tie in to the main story or are an allegory to the main story, like the Black Freighter. And it seems like the Minutemen TV show, which focuses on the original Minutemen characters, that kind of influence the eventual characters we see in Watchmen.
But. I'm glad you picked up on that too, Jay. Again, I'm always like, am I reading way too much into this? But yeah, when they started playing that cartoon kind of, well, it's not cartoon, but it felt like an animated
intro.
Intro for the American Hero story, I was thinking, is this the Black Freighter that is basically follows in Watchmen? Like, that would be a really cool connection and a really great way to showcase some of the past of the Minutemen. So and really through that lens too, like the fact that it's like a documentary about their lives, and you know it's going to be skewed, you know it's not going to tell all of the truth. Because it's, you know, it's a little bit more glorified, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, that's, I know we're jumping from the boy, to that, but, I'm glad that you picked up on that too.
And I'll be curious to see, and I assume that will kind of keep tying in, and now with Will Reeves' character, you know, and opening with, Tulsa Race Riot or Tulsa Race Massacre ties directly into that story, and I assume we'll kind of get more pieces of that as it plays out. And for anyone that watched The Leftovers, I think for the second and third season, Damon kind of opened up with kind of a flashback, but then eventually kind of tied into the main story. So,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, very, very riveting and very curious to see or learn more about Will Reeves and what his role is going to be on this show. Let's kind of get into our cop characters. So it seems that superheroes and the police, or so vigilantes and the police, have somehow kind of merged together in this town. And we have some characters like Red Scare, who's an interesting, I guess, Russian that is on the police force.
Loves his donuts.
Yeah. I had a bit of a Rorschach vibe from him, just because Rorschach was kind of this messy slob. And so that when he was eating the donut and like the pastry was all over his face kind of reminded me of that a little bit. But and then you had Panda, who seems like everybody hates him because he's like, well, Rule 27 says. And he basically ended up getting that guy shot because he was, following the rules or whatever. So I thought that was an interesting character among the many that we kind of quickly got introduced. And then we have Looking Glass, played by Tim Blake Nelson.
Oh, okay. I remember him saying LG, and I didn't know what LG stood for. So Looking Glass, that's
He's got an interesting kind of mask. He's got probably the most interesting mask out of anyone. And you know, I know that Rorschach, I assume his journal has inspired this 7th
Cavalry.
Cavalry. And because, you know, Rorschach was a racist and kind of just an awful person. So it hit whatever his speak has obviously influenced or skewed the influence of whatever this group is. But yeah, Looking Glass, thoughts on him, a bigger character or just, maybe a side character here? Matt, what's your thoughts?
Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, okay. I was stepping aside for Jack there. Looking Glass. Well, I think now that we see Judd's character, and obviously, like, that's not it for Judd. Clearly, we're going to get him in flashbacks and other you know, stuff that's going to fill out his character. So I don't feel like we've seen the last of Don Johnson. But I could see LG kind of, you know, definitely pulling his weight and maybe pushing forward maybe a little bit with his. I don't know. They all seem to really respect Angela's character. Sister Knight, so
for sure.
Yeah, but yeah, LG, yeah, very, very cool mask. It was very Rorschachian too. Yes. When he was sitting in the pod, like, there was all of the reflections on his mask, so I thought that was a really cool visual.
Now do we think that for the different characters that we're going to follow in this show, is there going to be a mirrored version or some type of, like, this is this show's Night Owl, or this is this show's comedian? It's because, like, in my mind, especially, and it could be a misdirect, but for Judd, it's like, okay, so he's the comedian of this season or show or whatever, which may not be the case. But, you know, do we look at characters like Red Scare, or I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of Rorschachian, or are those just kind of visual call-outs, and they're going to be their own characters? Jack, what are your thoughts there?
Well, you know, I just being new to the party, I don't know, but I did like how the LG came in and wiped his brow off it during the interrogation. I did find that funny. So I thought that was pretty cool. But I'm just new to the party, so I'm just I'm not willing to make a guess yet. I don't want to be wrong.
Just make a guess, Matt. What are your thoughts?
I'm a coward.
Well, knowing Damon, and I don't know him, but I mean, it's just everything that I've seen him do, it doesn't really follow by a playbook. And so I could see him kind of carving out, you know, I could see him starting off and saying, like, oh, we're going to have this person this way, but then it all kind of, it becomes its own thing. I mean, even when we look at Lost and, like, how they started off, like, well, we're going to have this character, and we're going to have this character, but all of those personalities kind of flipped and did different things. So, I wanted to mention Pirate Jenny, which I thought that was a funny name for a superhero. That was another, or not superhero, but one of the paid police.
It's interesting, right? Because they're all just human. They're all just straight up vigilantes, or I guess cops that are mass cops for their own protection. But there's nobody with superpowers per se.
Right. I feel like we're still going to probably meet more, you know, I mean, and I'm just so excited to be along for this ride as to what is going to happen in this season. I haven't even watched the preview for what's to come with the rest of the season, but I can only imagine that these characters or this world will open up as you know, the curtains pulled back even more.
Do you think we'll get more like Lost, more flashbacks, more backstory for all these characters? Because we got a little bit of Will Reeves, you know, we got his beginning. Do you think each week there'll be like, you know, like Angelo, her backstory and stuff like that?
That'd be interesting to see.
You think they'll go that way?
I don't know. I think maybe glimpses, but it seems like they're kind of just dropping us into the story, and they're, you know, if this is 2019, the events of Watchmen were 1985, so you're nearly 35 years from, or 35 years of time has passed in which Robert Redford's been the president for 30 of those years.
Yeah, right.
And things have changed.
Well, he's a natural. So,
which also means that Ford. So you know when they were reciting the presidents,
yes,
it goes Nixon, Ford, Redford. Mm-hmm. Well, Nixon was the president in 1985 Watchmen.
Yes. Right.
So that means Ford took over for him. Was only basically a one-termer in this scenario.
Poor Ford. Even this alternate reality is still in the.
The guy can't get no respect.
I'm a one-termer.
And then Redford steps in and basically kind of swings the pendulum of Nixon the other way. Because they mention, you know, about, I think on the radio there, about how gun rights are a lot more extreme in their kind of universe, which makes sense because we see that opening shot where the police officer has to get confirmation to pull the gun.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty, I thought it was a pretty intense scene.
It made you wonder, like, were they in on it? Were they in on it trying to kill Charlie?
I think they were.
But he kept saying it's not working. Well.
I'll send you the signal again. I
thought so as well. But then once I saw Panda, like it shifted my thoughts to where, oh, it's just Panda is the rule follower to a T, where it's almost at a detriment to, you know, being able to do the job. But
people like him are going extinct.
Yeah. But I did feel the same way you did, Jack, in terms of, oh, maybe Panda's in on it or whatever. But after seeing him, I was like, oh, maybe not. But
unless that's a misdirect.
It could be. And then, you know, towards the end, as Judd was kind of getting his uniform on and everything, I was like, okay, well, he's going to die or he's going to be shown as like the bad guy and, you know, mastermind the whole thing.
Yeah,
I figured the whole time he was the bad guy.
Well, you kind of wondered though, still, like when he was going to Charlie, like was he? Because we saw that little photo. It was a black and white photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there was actually two key photos that we saw, giving Judd some backstory without even actually telling us. Like, A, he's got a daughter, because we saw a picture of him on his desk. There was also a copy of Under the Hood, the book, the fictional book that exists within the Watchmen universe, that was actually on his desk.
Written by the original Night Owl.
Yeah, by the original Night Owl. And then later on, we see that black and white photo showing us that his father was a police officer.
Right.
And kind of gives you, you know, I don't know, that music, the tone, it was a little chilling. Like, I was kind of wondering, like, oh, man, is he going to go take care of Charlie? Like,
now, I mean, was he going to Charlie?
Yeah, that's what he told his wife.
So,
yeah, I know that's what he told his wife, but he didn't take any protection with him. His wife told him not to drive.
Well, but that's so maybe he was going to do that. And, Will Reeves' character, because remember he's inspired, or he's, you know, he looks up to was it that superhero character in that short video at the beginning, or the old
that's right he does. I know, that's a nice callback to even that opening black and white silent film.
I don't know what, or I'm blanking on what you call those.
Talkies.
It's a non-talkie.
Silent movie.
Silent movie. Sorry. Silent film. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Blanking on how to use words. But but then at the end of that, you know, he's bringing in that town sheriff saying, you know, he's corrupt, et cetera, et cetera. And that whole town wants to lynch that sheriff. He says, no, you don't do that. He, you know, needs to be tried under the law or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, is having Will Reeves' character, because he even jokes, like, do you think I could lift 200 pounds? And then he seemingly has, you know, hung up Judd. You know, did he know that Judd was corrupt and was, you know, doing what that hero of his did that he watched in that silent movie at the beginning of the episode? So it still could be that Judd was, you know, much like the Watchmen, or much like the comedian was a bad guy, maybe Judd is actually the bad guy, and he was saving Charlie.
Why did Will Reeves go against the character in the silent movie? He says no. We're gonna let the law take care of it.
Because he hangs Judd. Like his experience with the Tulsa race massacre
changed his perspective.
He's had 100 years to think this over, Jack.
That's true. That's true.
He's just like, nope, not gonna make that mistake.
Or 98 years, in all fairness.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, thanks for doing the math there for me. No, I mean, that's a good thought there, Jay, about the whole like connection to that and even with bringing in the corrupt sheriff. So, you know, maybe we will find out that he was going to kill Charlie. I'm curious as to if we'll get more from that character even. You know, since he is recovering and he didn't quite completely die. So there was one other.
He was awake and he was ready to talk. So that's the classic.
Yes.
We got to kill him now, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, why would Judd go? Why wouldn't he just send someone else?
Because he's so up the chain there. I mean, here's the other thing. So. And we haven't talked about the battle, you know, like the actual action of this is that after the pod and the interrogation and we got the answers, like they're at the cattle ranch. It's kind of funny because there's clearly only one cattle ranch in Tulsa. I thought there would be more, but
yeah, you would think so.
This is an alternate reality. Would.
Impossible Foods has made their Impossible Burger like 20 years ago, so there's less need for the cows.
Well, Redford's in charge. So, you know. Anyway, they do this raid on the cattle ranch, and we see the 7th Cavalry. You know, I assume this is just like a little small splinter cell or whatever, but they're taking out all of these old batteries, which is interesting, the watch callback here, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it could have been batteries from cameras, but no, it's batteries from watches. They're about ready to be raided and they all take these pills. I thought when they started taking these pills, I was like, oh, these are like super soldier pills or something.
Yes, I thought, I was like, is this PCP? Are they going to like...
I knew it was cyanide because I just watched the movie last night.
Oh.
Okay. Sorry.
I don't know. When was that in the movie?
There's no cyanide in the movie.
He gives him a cyanide tablet.
Oh, okay. Guess I don't remember that.
That's so. Okay.
Well, anyway.
Spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen it.
But to come back to that cool scene where we actually see the Night Owl-like ship come down out of the sky, and Judd is hell bent on killing those guys.
Yep.
And on one hand, you're like, yeah, it's the classic sheriff is going to get those guys, but what if he's got to cover his tracks?
Mm-hmm. That's I was thinking the whole time. I didn't trust Don Johnson from the beginning. Sorry.
doesn't have that good old Don Johnson swagger, you know.
It's not Miami Vice. He's not wearing a he's got a goatee. It just didn't look right.
I never heard him sing Oklahoma in the original Miami Vice, so I would be suspect. So,
but I think that you're right, Matt. I think that's why he was so hell bent on getting, you know, when the plane took off, he was going to stop them no matter what.
Well, and then there's that chilling moment too, where after the party that we see them having, where he tells Angela, tick tock, tick tock, like and he's doing it in kind of like a jokey manner, but you're also kind of like, the clock is actually ticking in the background. I had to turn up my volume because I was like, where is this clock ticking coming from?
And it then ties into the kind of intro. It's Hero Story, American Hero Story, the name of it, but it's about the Minutemen.
What was that, Jay?
The TV show's name, the Minutemen.
Oh,
TV
show. Yeah, American Hero Story.
American Hero Story. The clock is in there because that story has this, you know, clock motif as well.
The Minutemen.
Yep.
Yeah. So, a lot of time throughout this. Hopefully there's not too much more math.
They're each connected to it, right? So you have the 7th Cavalry with their TikTok chant, plus they're using batteries from these older watches that aren't made anymore in this universe. Because those watch batteries are really dangerous. They kill kids who swallow those batteries. But I'd be curious to see what they're going to use those for. And Ozymandias has his clock as well that was made for him or gifted to him by one of his robot servants. It's a thing.
A couple other call outs to the comic book that I just wanted to make sure that we mentioned. We see this guy with a sign that says the future is bright instead mm-hmm. of the end is nigh.
Yeah. Because
we always saw Rorschach holding a sign right. in the comic, the end is nigh. So I thought that was a nice little twist there.
Upside down Statue of Liberty. So it was still kind of a challenge, or seemingly that stuff's still not good. But yeah.
We saw the smiley face out of Yolks.
Yes.
Which was very cool.
Well, was she trying to say something when she said you separate the yolks from the white? They need to be separate.
I never would have picked up on that, but possibly.
Because there was, obviously a racist theme going on there. I just wondered if that was done intentionally.
Well, the aspect of like racial tensions, I find very interesting that it's seeming to be one of the driving forces of unrest in, this time period that this show is focusing on, where and it, to an allegory to modern day, you could say that is something that is very, it's pressing in today's society. And then you look at the original Watchmen, where kind of nuclear holocaust was the main threats to their story and was the main driving thing for it, which was the case. It was still the Cold War when right. that story was written. So, I think that's another connection to the original Watchmen and what that one focused on, and how this one in today's world and what it is focusing on, should set up for a very kind of moving story that we can follow that will probably hit close to home for a lot of people watching it.
Oh yeah, I'm curious as to what that the one kid that she knew, which wasn't her son. It didn't seem like that was her son.
No, that is her son.
Is it
one that she took home?
Okay, all right.
I assume because he was at the she grounded him, so I assume that's her son.
Okay. I was confused by that because I'm taking notes as we're watching this, just making sure that I jot down stuff really quick. So I was probably busy trying to spell out Red Fordations because I was like, what is Red Fordations? Does this kid just not know how to talk?
Well, because he's like, Robert Redford's the president.
Red Fordations. Gotcha.
It's probably like a government.
Yeah,
like a reformation.
They did reparations in
reparations. Yeah.
And much like, the Affordable Health Care Act was called Obamacare, people that probably criticize it probably call it mm-hmm. Red Fordations.
No, that makes sense now. Thanks, guys. Really. One other little call out there, too, is she, on her pager, she gets the little bighorn, pager message, which the Battle of Little Bighorn involved the 7th Cavalry. So... Yeah. It was definitely like a little, like that must have been their little code,
It's interesting, too, that it's, they call it 7Ks because their cavalry is with a K. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you think the KKK is bad. We're like four times more Ks in this group.
That's true. I hadn't even put that together, too. So that's very cool. A lot of stuff here. I'm still kind of processing a lot of this episode. I really liked the tone that it set with everything. and all of the call-outs to the original comic, but also moving it way far forward and, you know, basically making it its own universe too. Like it just feels a lot more lived in. The masks didn't seem, I liked how they were very real world masks that they were wearing.
What I really liked about it, and it's only one episode in, but I think that to your point, Matt, it did move the story forward, but it still has similar elements or similar bigger people are still at play, where we still have Dr. Manhattan, where he's, I guess, just been chilling on Mars for 35 years, as far as we know.
Is he wearing pants?
It's okay. HBO, just... so he doesn't have to.
Okay.
And Ozymandias is still, you know, probably up to his, you know.
Ozymandias. Also not wearing pants either.
Not wearing pants, yeah.
Like, he's just like, you know, if Dr. Manhattan can go naked, boom, so can I.
And then we have this story of Regina King's character, Angela. I think... I was really bought into her character. I mean, it's Regina King's like one of the best of the best. So,
she's amazing.
Very easy to like buy into the story that she's putting out there, and be very curious. I'm in. It feels like Watchmen, but it feels new at the same time. And I think, you know, that was a really hard needle to thread, I think, for Damon and company. And I think they've done it with episode one. So I'm excited to see where it goes from here. Jack, what's your thoughts? And we'll kind of close out our discussion here.
Again, I new to the party, but I was like, I was drawn in right away. I mean, it was so well done. Like you said, it has Regina King. So that's a plus. Damon Lindelof, that's a plus. I mean, had Don Johnson... maybe not a plus. I don't know. We'll wait and see. But I enjoyed it. I can't wait for the next. It's one of those things. It's almost like you wish. I'm kind of, you know, you want to binge. You don't want to binge. But it's like, oh, wait. I want to see what's going to happen next. Now I got to wait a whole week because it's HBO. But, you know, but it did draw me in. I was like, okay, I got to know more. But I guess I'll wait.
The trailer and, you know, keep people spoiler free. I'm not going to mention too much of it, but the trailer definitely seemed interesting as well. It's going to expand far beyond probably what this first episode is going to do, I would assume. And I'll be curious to see how that goes. I also thought it was interesting just, you know, during the credits, because I know Alan Moore, you know, has nothing to do with this post the original stories that they did and kind of wants nothing to do with it. But how, like, he's not even in the credits anywhere, which is, you know, kind of true to him not wanting his name on it at all. Dave Gibbons is still there. So.
Yes. Yeah. Dave Gibbons is still.
He's like, I'm good. I'm good, Alan. I'll keep this going. But yeah.
They're paying me.
Oh, and the other thing I want to mention, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's score, I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Like it fit it perfectly, music... I thought.
Yeah.
Nice tension in the music. I wanted to mention before I forget, I guess it's good to kind of mention this at the very end, because it was one of the last things that that kind of as it's panning in on that badge with the blood drop, we also hear an owl hoot. So I thought that was a nice callback to the Night Owl. Whether we'll ever see the original Night Owl felt his influence in there, just like Rorschach, just like Dr. Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So it's cool that it's subtle enough that they're putting those little crumbs in there. So great beginning episode. I'm totally excited. I mean, to see what happens next. I love all of the mysteries, and as Jack put it at the very beginning, like it drew you right in, you know, like with that first part of that story, and
which is always hard for any TV show. That's the key, and I thought they did a good job with it.
I kept wondering if that baby that baby girl would be like her mom, you know, or something, or her grandmother, you know, like, yeah. Would she have some relationship to Angela's character?
Well, Angela, she's, you know, she said she spent time in Vietnam too. So,
right.
Yeah, she said she was born in Vietnam, right?
Yeah, which, you know, was a big part of
the 51st state, right?
Oh, is that what she said?
Yeah, they did. They mentioned that Vietnam is a state, and it plays a big role in the Watchmen comic as far as the comedian being over there and Dr. Manhattan basically killing Viet Cong and they surrendered. So clearly that's how Nixon got his face on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, that too. The changed American flag is this,
Tricky know, Dick.
Oh yeah, they changed the American flag. That's right. And a lot of call outs to those cavalry members wearing American flag hats. And I know that in some of the articles that I had read in preparation for this upcoming show is that I think Damon was basically like, this is going to upset people on both sides, like, you know, left or right, whatever your political beliefs are, like he's kind of like, this is going to upset people. So I'm curious to see where this story is going to take us in regards to his comments and his feelings that this is going to make people mad. So bring it.
Again, the original Watchmen didn't pull any punches either. It's the first episode's compelling, and I have a feeling the entirety of the show is going to be compelling. We'll have to watch and see. And Matt, Jack, and myself will be here to talk about it if you want to talk with us as well. This is our first episode, so no listener feedback yet, but if you'd like to give us an email, you can do so at watchmanjjm@gmail.com. Also, you can send us a phone call at 385-309-0311.
You can send a phone call?
Yeah, send a phone call. Call a phone call.
Can you give us a call?
Ring a phone call? Call a phone call.
I think what Jack is meaning to say is call anytime.
Call anytime.
Call anytime. Yeah. Yes, that's...
So we've been doing this spiel for almost 15 years, Jack. But thank you. but yes,
I'm here to help.
We will record these episodes right after the episode airs on the East Coast. So if you do want to get your that episode's feedback in, call us right after that episode drops. If not, no worries. We will still play it the next week. Right. All right, that'll do it. Any other final thoughts, guys, before we close it out?
No.
No, that's great. Great show, guys.
Want to thank people that make this show possible, our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack, especially Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Also, if you use Amazon, use our Amazon link, jayandjack.com/Amazon. It'll look exactly like the Amazon you know and love, but a small percentage of all those sales will go to the Jay and Jack production fold. All right, check out the other podcasts on our network. Jack, Colleen, and I are talking about Survivor. This is our 12th season of the show, of the podcast. So always love chatting with my wife, and I guess Jack's there too.
I try.
Matt, you host Owen and Brew's Barbecue, our Star Wars podcast, and the trailer drops on Monday, and tickets
Can't
go on
wait.
Sale on Monday.
Yes.
So will there be an episode soon-ish on that?
I'm hoping so. I know Nick and I have discussed about covering Mandalorian.
Don't Can't beg wait. Me. I'm not coming on.
I don't think we could have you on because we try to run a tighter ship. We have to keep it within an hour.
That's fine.
But anyway, yes, we'll be covering The Mandalorian, and if we can get an extra episode out this week after our CAD duties, we will definitely try to fit in a trailer talk for sure. Awesome. Looking forward to getting my seats as soon as I can. So
yeah, I know I'm kind of nervous. I'm trying to think of my game plan for getting tickets because Zach's at the age now where I feel like he can go with me.
He'd like it, wouldn't he?
Yeah, we just did Ghostbusters because they re-released it in theaters, and he had fun at that. So I feel like, all right, Star Wars time, kid. anyway, but yeah, so excited to hear that on Owen and Brew's Barbecue. Also, Matt and Jack are on Ramblecast After Dark, and you guys record, what, once a week for 7 hours, I think?
Yeah, seems like it, yeah.
But check that out, as well as I believe the broadcast is always making shows as well. So you can find all of those at jayandjack.com.
And Dancing with the Stars. iTunes.
Oh, that's right. I didn't know the show was still on. Not your podcast, but the actual show.
No, the show's still on.
But yeah, you'll find all of our podcasts at jayandjack.com/iTunes and subscribe today. All right, that'll do it. We'll see you all next time. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.
Nothing for you, Matt?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess a great show, kids. One in a Watchmen? I don't know.
Jeez. Are you drinking gin again over there?
No.